It's time again for the Scotty Johnny podcast with your host, Scotty Johnny himself, John Barnett, and the ego himself, Cheddar Talk, Aaron Flottam, talking Wisconsin sports, NFL through D3, college hockey, doesn't matter. Two mics, two crusty vets, two opinions, one based in reality and one based in what do you bet on Twitter, with music by Delete Great Cars and Trucks. Here's John and Aaron.
Welcome, welcome, one and all. Welcome into the Scotty Johnny podcast. I am your not-so-humble host, Jonathan Barnett, Scotty Johnny himself, coming at you. And with me, as per usual, I have Aaron Flottam.
Hey, John, what's going on, man? It was a fun-filled weekend, and I did something we haven't done in a long time this weekend, John.
I know. We were Wendy and I are both living vicariously through you on Sunday, but you cursed us. Tell everybody where you were if they didn't follow you on Twitter and see it.
We went to Miller Park. I got a wild hair up my butt on Friday, and I asked Holly if maybe on Sunday we should take the kids. Because here in Janesville, we're an hour away from Miller Park. It's a really easy up I-43 and get to the stadium. And I was – because, you know, I was very apprehensive at first about going to the game because, you know, when they first started the season, there was no tailgating.
Yeah.
And – you know, half the fun of going to a Brewers game is tailgating. Even if it's just a couple brats, you know, and a couple pops before you go inside, you know, as part of the experience. And then during Friday night's game, Bob was talking about, well, it's good to see people outside tailgating again, Jeff. You know, it's good to see them out there. And things coming back to normal. It's good to see the stadium half full. There's noise. It's a good thing. And I went, So I got on MLB.com/Brewers. And, got tickets in row four or in section 418, row 16 up in the nosebleeds, even though those are very good seats, underrated. You can see the whole game so well up there. Me and Holly and the kids went and we did a little tailgating on Sunday morning and watched the game. It didn't work out for the Brewers. We actually ended up splitting at the bottom of the seventh inning just because we were pushing our luck with the kids sitting in their seats for seven straight innings with only one trip for Dippin' Dots. And and at that point, we'd seen five home runs, two from Vogelbach, one from Garcia, and then two from the Pirates. So it was including the longest home run I've ever seen in my life, Moran from the Pirates. Man, he smoked one in the seventh inning.
Yeah,
but that was huge. But it was a lot of fun. And honestly, John, it was a great experience because right now they're staggering the cars in the parking lot for social distancing. So every other parking stall. And so, you know, it's almost like a giant Z too, you know, back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. So you don't have a car in front of you. You have a car to the left and right in front of you and no car next to you. So you have plenty of space in the parking lot. And then when you get inside the stadium, it's the best thing ever. Yeah. Your family of four has five seats and there's no one in the row in front of you, behind you, or to the right or left of you. So it's pretty awesome. And like I was saying, acoustically wise, like, you know, back in the old days when the Brewers were having some down years, you know, you'd go there and there'd be 5,000 to 10,000 fans and there'd be no sound because everyone eventually just filters to the front of the stadium because security doesn't care. And there's no noise because everyone's down at field level. Well, because everyone's spaced out, there's only 11,000 of us, but we were all the way up to the rafters. So whenever anything happened, it wasn't as loud as 40,000 people, but there was sound coming from every part of the stadium. And it was pretty neat, and I loved it, and it was good to be back there. When we moved down here from Duluth a couple of years ago, it was December 2018. We only got to a couple games because we were busy moving and everything else like that, and I was considering buying a 20-game package last year, and then everything happened, you know, and so it was good because, you know, I love going to Brewers games. I had relatives down here when I was a kid. That was a great memory for me when I was a kid. I loved going to Brewers games, and it's still one of the funnest things ever. And it was good to feel normal for, if not 4 hours. So,
right. And if you're the person who corrects Aaron into saying it's AmFam Stadium or American Family Park or whatever, go away.
Oh, it's very apparent that it's AmFam Field, by the way, just so you know, when you get there. Yeah. They did a good job of scrubbing that.
Cause they're not just branding, they're rebranding. So they have to go big.
Right.
I mean,
and I don't care. I'm one of those ones that didn't care and said, whatever. It's, you know, if Miller doesn't want to pull up the money for the stadium fees, why not have a good Wisconsin company pay for the naming rights. So whatever, they employ more people in Wisconsin than Miller does. So
Either way, I mean, I guess the big thing that gets me is I'm like, people still call it the Sears Tower. It hasn't been the Sears Tower in a long time now.
Almost two
and
decades.
People will be upset. We were
just talking about
it
the Sky Dome before the podcast. That's been Rogers Field for 20 years now.
Yeah, whatever it is. And I don't even know. Is it Rogers Cinemas or was it Rogers what? I don't know.
Rogers, the cell phone company. It's the equivalent of AT&T. Terrible. You know, people still call whatever that atrocity in South Chicago is, they still call that Comiskey, even though it doesn't look anything like Comiskey.
Is it U.S. Cellular Field still, or what is it now?
It's not even U.S. Cellular
Field. No, it's something else. I drove by there the other day as we were coming back from Virginia and such, and because it's right by the interstate.
It is not a pretty stadium. They really messed that up.
I haven't been in there. I remember old Comiskey was just such a cool looking building because it was so old. It was just kind of a neat place.
Was. Yeah, and they should have done everything they could to preserve it. Yeah. It's just like old Tiger.
Yeah. Tiger Stadium too was a fun one to look at, just with the way that the field was and everything, and just the stands back there and how that all went. But we're gonna start off everything here now. We gotta get back into things with a little draft talk, and then we'll start doing a little bit of the other stuff about, you know, teams that actually played games. We're going to start it all off with our main event.
Starting things off with the main event.
All right, Aaron. So starting off in the main event, like we talked about before show, and like I just, I guess, alluded to, or at least directly, explicitly said, to make a long statement longer, we're going to talk about the Packers. Mostly because we're going to talk about, well, I guess the first thing I do want to say, and this is it's not really a big sports story for the most part, but it is kind of financially a good sports story. The Packers are going to be moving almost all of their OTAs to virtual. Now, why does this matter, Aaron? Because you get paid to be at your workouts. There were specific bonuses tied to showing up for in-person workouts with your team. Now, the purpose of that was to make sure you showed up, that you did your workout, and they could check on you, that they knew where you were and what was happening. But they're not doing that right now. Several teams already opted out. Packers didn't wait for the players. The Packers said, we're going to do most of this virtually. Don't worry about it. That's the smart move, right?
Like, it is. I mean, especially with the Packers cap situation. So at this point, who was I talking about? We should have him on the show. Kevin, he's a capologist on the site. CPA in the real world. And he studies I'll get back to that at some other point. But yeah, no, the Packers cap situation is going to start looking like the Vikings here pretty quick.
Kind of does already.
Yeah.
Now, the biggest thing is not the cap thing. I think the big thing is, like, the players want their money. Mm-hmm. You're saying, I'm going to give you the money. Don't worry about it. We've got you. I think that's the best thing you can do to try to make sure you're maintaining a team that can compete year in and year out, is show that, you know, we're still going to pay you. We're going to take care of you.
Well, I think it's going to help the cap situation.
It's not going to help the cap situation. What it's saying is it's going to help the players. It doesn't have anything
to do with it. Oh, shoot. I'm sorry. I misunderstood you, John.
It's their bonuses. Yeah, no, it's fine. It's their bonuses. And I guess it could possibly have something tied to the cap, but I don't think the money is going to be substantial.
I'm sorry. I was confused. I thought you meant that if they did it virtually, they didn't have to pay him for showing up for the workouts.
They're going to get paid. Which is the best part of it, is like they're making sure their players are going to get paid. They're going to do their workouts, and they're going to do it from where they feel safe. And the Packers just right away saying, guys, don't worry about it. We got you. You know, like it's okay. Take care of yourselves. Show up, and we're going to make this work.
Well, that's easy right now with the Packers too, because the Packers don't have any malignants on their team really to speak of. I don't think
they draft good.
Is there anybody with questionable work ethic on the team right now?
I wouldn't say so. I mean, the thing that people get mad at is there are people who get hurt, which is not the same thing. That's not
the same thing. Yeah. So, no. I mean, yeah, MVS drops a lot of balls, but, you know, that has nothing to do with his work ethic. That just is Stonehands McGee. Anyways. So, I don't think we have any, you know, usually there's at least one, like, I mean, the Packers have done a really good job of building a team that has good character people on it. That's for sure.
Yeah, so they've done a pretty good job of putting together those groups, and that's been...
So let's bring in OBJ.
Yeah, let's do it. We'll make him work, right? I don't know.
Actually, OBJ has really good work ethic. That's not a question with him.
He just hates losing more than anything, and then he allows that to affect his ability to interact with human beings.
Which, and then he fights Nets on the sideline. Has questionable social morals. Yeah.
I mean, anyway, that's a tough line. You want a guy who's a competitor, but you don't want his competitive nature to cost you games. Like, you want it to help you win games.
Right. He does wear $50,000 watches during games, so that's a nice touch.
Why not? So, I'm not going to begrudge a guy some
$150,000. I don't know. He was $150,000 watch. Anyways, man, yeah,
that's a couple years.
Him and Ray Guy. Rick. Do you remember Ray Guy wore a watch in games?
I guess I forgot that.
Yes, he does.
Makes sense.
Did. He hasn't played in 40 years, Aaron.
Hasn't been doing anything. Strange. All right. So the things we're going to look at some draft stuff now, though. We're going to give you just kind of some look ats here. I've been going through some game films, actually sitting down with my son, and we're just watching a ton of film, just watching full game films.
Yeah, hey, thanks, by the way, for watching offensive linemen and their blocking techniques. I'm glad I didn't have to do that.
No, okay, and this is the thing where I'm kind of at now is I think the Packers go cornerback first round. And I think my basic reasonings on this are the couple guys that I would really love to see go to the Packers, like Slater out of Northwestern or is it Sewell out of Oregon. Those guys are maulers. They're just beasts and they're fantastic. Okay. The other guy I'd kind of liked to see a little bit more is Christian Darrisaw. And unfortunately I see him going in a lot of mocks to the Vikings, which would mean that that's a good pick. That is a good pick. Mm-hmm. He's a guy who can move. He gets a good body. He moves around pretty well. It's a kid out of Virginia Tech. They don't do as much pass blocking, which is the one thing that concerns me. I really want to see somebody who can pass block, obviously, in our offense. We're going to rely on big mauling guards for a lot of our run stuff. Not that not that our tackles aren't horribly involved in the run game, just I really, really want them to be, get that good step. And make sure they're getting backwards and they use their hands well and they have good, good bend to keep themselves upright and stay in front of guys. Mm-hmm. The guys who are more likely than not available around the area where the Packers are picking, there's three names that come up a lot. Tevin Jenkins out of Oklahoma State. Now, the one thing that's going to be hard for him is, first off, the guy's a monster. I'm trying to think. I just had his Raz up here, too. And for everybody who
haven't heard that acronym in a year,
in a week, I definitely used it last week.
Did you use it last week?
I did. I've used it a couple times because, as we keep saying,
it only comes up during draft time.
Only comes up during draft time
because mid season, like around week eight, we don't go, well, that guy had an awesome Raz coming into the season. Yeah. I don't know why he sucks
unless you're confused by a guy, you're like, well, I didn't see this guy coming. Then you look back, you're like, he had a 9.8 Raz. Raz is
I got into poison ivy bush last fall and I got the Raz all over my legs.
No.
Anyhow, sorry.
Relative athletic score. And basically what it does is it creates a chart that maps things like what is your height, your weight, your vertical, your horizontal jump, your 40, including separate columns for your 20 and 10 yard splits. Your bench, and then your three cone drill and your 20-yard shuttle. So it puts all those together into a specific program and comes out and says, where do you rate on all of that? Now, the problem this year is I don't know how much to trust any of these numbers.
No.
Because there's no combine. You can't compare combine to pro day.
There's no combine, and there's a bunch of abbreviated seasons. I mean,
Yeah. The film is one thing, but if you're just going Raz, if I'm just saying just the measurable on Raz,
wasn't it a thing too? Like DK Metcalf had a horrible Raz.
No, his was insane. His was insanely good.
Okay,
he only ran two routes.
He was proving that Raz is right, and the eye test is wrong.
Well, he's proving that Raz is valuable. The problem he had in college was that he wasn't a good route runner, and mostly Seattle doesn't use him to run routes. They just let him go.
Mississippi State too.
Ole Miss. He was the second best receiver on his own team. Like,
yeah, so I mean,
AJ Brown was there, and AJ Brown's better than him. He just is. He plays in.
I don't remember Devontae Adams in college. I mean,
not much playing at Fresno State. You didn't see as much of Devontae. Obviously, he wasn't big. Everyone thought he was an early second, and that's where we got him. And he's been fantastic. It's the route running, the jumping, and the hand skills that people were interested
in. I don't know what his RAS would have been coming out of college. I'm sure it existed then, but it probably would have been pretty good. So
decent, but yeah. I don't remember any of that, but yeah. The guy we're talking about, though, Tevin Jenkins, out of Oklahoma, he actually
did. Leroy Jenkins? Tevin Jenkins,
Oklahoma State Cowboys, has a 9.74 RAS. Now, is he as fast as what they have here? And I'll look up his player page while I got him here. So he's got like a 7.693 cone, which is not the greatest. What they're saying is essentially he's got a 5.0140. His speed is elite. His agility is good, only good. He's got a 4.68 shuttle and a 7.693 cone. Those are good, not great. Definitely not elite numbers. But, yeah, his height, he's 6'5", 317. He got up. He does have elite strength. He got 36 bench up. And so that's – and that one's a pretty easy measurable too, because – it's kind of hard to cheat the clock on how many times did you lift 225. Vertical is 32.5, which is elite for a lineman, and he has a 8-foot, 10-inch vertical, or broad, I mean. So on the whole, he's got pretty good athleticism. Problem I have with him is his first step is not great. There's some times where his back kick, you know, like he's lining up. He plays a lot on the right. He played both sides at Oklahoma State. There's a lot of times that you know, you've got that stance where you got the one leg back and you're in the pass blocking stance getting ready to go. That back leg kick sometimes almost throws him off balance. And sometimes it's really short. I saw a couple of times he got himself so off balance. Speed rushing DNs just knocked him over. You know, just got an arm into his chest and just drove him to the ground on their way to the quarterback. And I was like, you can't do that. He's not always bad, though. He has some good things. I just have some concerns on his steps that really do kind of confuse me. When he tries to move sideways, like if he's got to do kind of a pull, and what I mean by pull is it's not like the old high school type pulls. College and the pros, their pull is more of a sidestep shuffle and then start moving to the hole and then up and getting into that second level and trying to just be – essentially a fullback from the backside where you're ignoring somebody or something.
Right.
His footwork's terrible on that. He's stepping with the far foot. You know, like he's pulling left and I'll see his right foot move first. And I'm like, what coach allows that to continue happening? I guess the good thing is
what college is he out of?
Oklahoma State. And that's the other thing is they're running that spread offense. The idea is he's not going to be forced to block for more than 2-3 seconds because the ball comes out so fast.
Right.
But I have serious concerns about him because I think he would be good. If he were a second round pick, you say we coach him a little bit, give him a chance. He might end up being a guard in the long run, which is fine. He could be a decent guard. He's a mauler. He's a big guy. He can push people around. Yeah. His footwork needs work. His handwork needs work. He needs to get more aggressive in terms of keeping hands off and everything. But he's okay. He's very athletic. He could be teachable and all that. If you're going first round, I don't want a guy. We're waiting a year to make him any good. The next two guys on this list, Liam Eichenberg out of Notre Dame and Jalen Mayfield. Both of them, I don't know. Mayfield, I thought, did pretty well. He played almost exclusively on the right. His footwork's okay. His pass block is not amazing. He's a guy who stood up in the Big Ten and looked okay in some games I watched him playing against, you know, Ohio State pass rushers, Alabama pass rushers from the year before. He looks okay. He's got enough technique that he's somebody there who could be useful, but probably more of a right tackle. And if we're picking him, remember everybody, Bakhtiari's not going to be there right away. He's got a torn ACL. He's coming back from that. It'll probably be later in the year before we see him, if not the playoffs. I mean, he got hurt in the playoffs. That's a year. So the idea that then if you could even have him at right tackle and then putting Turner over to left or something like that, because you don't want to I mean, there's going to be some shuffling around. Well, they're talking about putting
Elton Jenkins out there too, and it's like, no, that's our center now, right? I thought.
I don't know. I don't know what to do, unless we draft a center.
But I mean,
which there's an interesting center I think would be kind of fun, maybe second round if he's still there. But anyhow, the kid out of Notre Dame, I just didn't see. Like, you think Notre Dame linemen recently they've been just massive brawlers, and you think, you know, Quentin Nelson, right? Mm-hmm. And you're just like, that guy kills. That dude is amazing, and just
Colts,
he moves.
Colts guy, right?
Yeah, the guy from the Colts now.
Yep.
This guy's not that. And first off, he's not a guard. Guard is a little different in that regard, but I'll try to say guard too many times. But anyhow, he's a tackle. He doesn't necessarily do so great in space. I watched him get beat around the edge far too many times. The quick outstep and then cut inside, you know, taking the B gap, and just, you know, that happened far too many times against, you know, decent to good pass rushers. And they're all good at the next level for the most part. I don't know. I just think that in terms of the value you're getting in the first round, I don't like these tackles that will be there. If Darrisaw fell, I would be far more interested. But I don't know that he does, and I think that there'll be more value for some of these later tackles that you'll be seeing in you know, further down the line. Samuel Cosmi out of Texas, Spencer Brown out of Northern Iowa. He actually has a perfect 10 on his RAS. He's probably a third round pick.
Yeah, and that's what I was gonna say that with all the stuff you're breaking down about people taking the first and second round. Packers have an absolute beautiful track record of taking, with the outside of Elton Jenkins, taking linemen after the third round.
Yeah.
Corey Linsley, what was he, a third round, fifth rounder, right?
Something like that.
We did turn.
And then, yeah, we're going to have
Bakhtiari came from an 0-10 Colorado State.
Yeah, Colorado team. Colorado
Buffalo. In the fourth round. I mean, so I'm not even really worried. I think the Packers should waste their first round draft pick on something else besides, because they'll get it wrong anyways. Well, I say that, but we had Jair Alexander.
It's one of those things where tackle and quarterback, you know, the two biggest parts of your offense in most offenses, and people overdraft them all the time because the value of the position. But I think you can still get value at that position later. And so I think, like, waiting and trying to pick up somebody like I said, Samuel Cosmi out of Texas, or getting Spencer Brown, third round type guys who have very high athletic scores, you know, and if they're a project, then the value is still fine because you're getting that out of it.
Not having a top 10 pick, you're not going to get a field ready left tackle to take back to Ari's place, nor would you want to draft a left tackle anyhow, because that would be a waste of cap anyways, because you just signed back to Ari to such a big deal.
Right.
Like, you don't want to go and draft a left tackle. I mean, that'd be like drafting a quarterback in the first round when you have Aaron Rodgers. I mean, that's just dumb. The one thing, you talked about cornerback again, and one of the strengths of the Packers is their secondary. So I've been questioning that anyways. Like, I understand the need for another cornerback, but to burn another first rounder on a cornerback, why not? You know, the one thing the Packers can't seem to do is stop the run.
Okay.
And so you get pressure on a consistent basis. So, I mean, I know we've dropped a lot of capital into the Smith brothers and then drafting Rashawn Gary first overall. So I'm not necessarily saying a pass rusher, but how about somebody to help out Kenny Clark? Because Kenny Clark's a one-man army on the inside right now. Like, I think if there's anywhere you want to put some money into or some draft capital into, since we don't have money to spend, it would be helping out Kenny Clark.
Well, Barmore is one of those guys that's going to get a lot of attention in that regard too. To find some of his stuff here, but he's going to be a guy at defensive tackle who did play some at, I think, well, kind of like a three look, but I mean, he's the best D tackle. He's the kid out of Alabama, 6'4", 310, big frame, moves well. He's the best D tackle in this draft. I mean, he's projecting to the back end of the first round. That's a pick you'd be okay with, I think, in most regards too, because
I would be absolutely okay with that.
Yeah, one of the other guys that's kind of interesting.
Guess what? San Francisco's not gonna suck again this year. They're gonna get healthy, and guess what they did to the Packers 2 years ago?
Well, and we'll see how their guys come back. Two different torn ACLs on the defensive line too is you know coming back this next year. So we'll see how that goes for them. The other guys gonna be interesting.
I mean, is there anybody like? Do we have a Gilby Brown coming out of the draft this year, or a Hagodi Nagata, like someone who's just a giant human being? Did I say his name right? Hagodi Nagata, right? The guy from the Ravens.
Oh, Hagodi Nagata.
Yeah,
he went to the Lions to end his career. Yeah.
Yeah, no, in his prime, that dude was a beast, man.
I don't know about that
size. He was a black hole, man. He sucked up four linemen all the time.
I don't see any guys quite
He's
that
the reason
large.
Why Ray Lewis was able to do what Ray Lewis did.
That is correct. Of the guys towards the top end, I don't see guys who are going to be, you know, that 340-pound guy in the middle.
Ray Lewis was good. This isn't taking away from Ray Lewis, but... That dude sucked up three linemen on every single play. Like
he was great. Yeah, he was exactly what they needed in that group there. One of the other names, I guess, if you want to look further down the line for some of that defensive line help, the guy who can kind of get some pressure, could be an every down player and could move out even to the D end or even on that nickel. He could be the other down lineman. Osa Odigizawa. Odigizawa. All right. UCLA. Get to know that name. He's 6'2", 282, also a UCLA guy like Kenny Clark. He's getting some press in a couple other places, too. He's got good first step. He's got good quickness, good lateral quickness. He doesn't give ground. He's a high motor type player. He looked really good when you watch him on film. One big problem, though, with that pick and you know how much I enjoy watching Osa Odigizawa. Pardon me. That's going to be a name that get better.
Pardon me right there.
Yeah. his RAS is not good. All right. He's 7.64. I'm looking through here. I mean, he didn't even do a 40. So that's one thing probably dragged him down. I don't know what his sprint times are. His shuttle is pretty nice. He's got a 4.44 shuttle, 20-yard shuttle. His three cone is okay. 7.57. Mm-hmm. We'd like to see that closer to 7. He's only 6'1 and a half and 282. His bench is 25. He's got good explosivity. His vertical and his broad jump are both very good. They're good to elite. All right. Great to elite. But yeah, if you're going to be spending something there, the thing is, you're looking at him in maybe third round and seeing what he can do next to the rest of the people on your line. But you know, Barmore is the first name you're going to be thinking about. And then this is a guy later down the line who could be interesting. The corners, though, in this draft, and you'll recognize several of them because you watch their dads, play. Because man, it's kind of scary how many of them are just guys we've already.
I know. Winfield Jr. haunted us in the NFC Championship game last year.
Yeah, but look at this, J.C. Horn. Joe Horn's kid.
There's
a 9.99 RAS.
You just quiz me and let me see if I can figure it out. How about that?
Okay. Patrick Surtain, the second.
What was his dad's name?
I think it's Patrick Surtain.
I guess. Yeah, good point. Patrick Surtain.
But
it's
not a junior, so I guess I don't know why he's like that. Asante Samuel Jr.
Minshew was the second, but he wasn't a junior.
Was that a junior?
You don't know.
Yeah. And Asante Samuel Jr. I mean, that one's right there. That but it's just like, man, the number of those are three guys who are like, wow, that would be nice to have any of them. Patrick Surtain's going to be a top 10 pick almost certainly. I mean, I would love if he fell to us. He's the Alabama cornerback, physical, good. He does everything. He's got he has a 9.99? Is that what I got at there?
Yeah.
Maybe he didn't, but he was a 9.96. 9.99 was J.C. Horn, South Carolina.
Got it.
If either of those somehow fell to us, that's an Aaron Rodgers type falls to us type play. But
no, that's hyperbole. But
okay. Well, getting a guy who's going to be a guy who should start for your team next year, and should start for any team next year. And having him fall to the bottom of the first round, that's something that shouldn't happen. We're talking about a guy who should be a top 10 pick and just somehow drops to 20, drops to 30. You know, it's like, that shouldn't happen. But I don't know. It would be great if it did. My guess is the guys who are going to be closer to where the Packers are picking, Greg Newsom out of Northwestern. Asante Samuel's probably still going to be around that area. Caleb Farley's going to be close in there. There's a Kelvin Joseph out of Kentucky and Elijah Molden out of Washington. There's several good names in the back half of the part of the second round who are going to be, you know, big athletic players who can do things for your team. I'm seeing also, I want to make sure I'm getting the numbers right on him too. Maybe he's over. Give me 1 second here. I want to pull this up, but Melifonwu here, Ifeatu Melifonwu out of Syracuse. He's probably going to be a little further down the list, and he might be a second round pick. But he's a 9.69, super athletic cornerback out of Syracuse. He's going to be a guy who's very interesting to watch too. He's got a higher RAS score than Greg Newsom, just slightly. Greg Newsom had a little bit of injury history, but he's a solid Northwestern defensive player. You know he's going to be involved in tackling. You know that he's going to be right up in front of everybody doing the little things. Like Northwestern defensive players, they drive me crazy, but they do all the little things. All right, and that's exactly what we need on some
super
of these
chesty.
Players. Yeah, like they're
super chesty.
Yeah, like their stupid head coach chesty. And his big stupid face. I don't know if I've mentioned I don't like him.
Hey, those of us have big faces. Take offense to that.
I do not. I'm fine. He's got a stupid face. I just have a big face.
Okay. Yeah.
You don't have a stupid good face call. Either, Aaron. You're a good-looking man.
Yeah, I was.
Just like to drop that on you every now and then.
The 40s ain't doing so hot for me right now. Yeah, but anyways.
But
as I sit here and look at a picture of me and Holly when we first met, and I'm like, oh, that was 35 pounds ago. Anyway,
I don't want to hear it.
Yeah, there.
I mean, I think the two most likely.
Oh yeah,
Greg Newsom, Greg Newsom and Asante Samuel Jr. Those are the two names I want to talk about.
Greg Newsom, number 21.
Yeah, not Craig. Trying to remember if Greg Newsom is like the nephew of Craig Newsom, isn't he? I thought I read that somewhere too.
Let's draft him and give him number 21.
The saddest thing about Craig Newsom's career is that one of the last things he did in football was he was the coach of the indoor football league, not the arena football league, but a smaller indoor football league team in lacrosse called the Night Train, where he was then arrested because he was providing painkillers to players and other people. So,
well, at least his career, at least it didn't end as poorly as Darren Sharper, so let's go that route.
Let's make sure no one does. That's
officer, no.
Terrible.
Sorry.
Yeah, but
draft talk.
Those are where I want to go now, or at least that's where I think is the most likely scenario, right? Yeah. But Aaron, you know me.
Mm-hmm.
you know that what I want is a big time playmaking inside linebacker. That's not what's going to happen. I'm going to tell you that's not what's going to happen. There's basically no chance that we're going to see that. But let me give you some names. Let me drop you some names that I am very excited about.
Okay.
Jabril Cox, if he falls, out of LSU.
Right.
Big, athletic, fast. He can cover. The other name that might actually be there, and I've run a couple of mocks, and he's there most of the time, and I would be perfectly fine with this pick. I just don't think it's where the Packers go. Jamin Davis out of Kentucky. Now, He's fast. He can cover. He can tackle. He's got an elite RAS score. He's one of those kind of smaller, like what you kind of hoped Oren Burks might turn into, except for, you know, if Oren Burks had been first round talent.
Mm-hmm.
He's fast. He's what, 6'2", 230, 235, I believe, and moves to the ball. He can blitz. He can get off blocks. He can cover. He does the things you want a linebacker to do. I would be very happy with that pick too. And I understand it's not going to happen, but I want to talk about it because that's my draft crush right now. Cause I love a good, serious athletic inside linebacker, but I will settle for this, Aaron. Chaz Surratt out of Chaz with two Z's.
Chaz. Does he bounce at a strip club on the weekends?
Have you ever watched Disenchantment? That show is pretty funny. It's
not familiar.
Matt Groening on Netflix. Okay. It's a Netflix show about like a medieval kingdom with magic and stuff like that, but it's Matt Groening. So it's like The Simpsons or Futurama set in the Middle Ages with magic and, you know, elves and stuff and demons. It's really funny and interesting. And one of the best parts, they got this guy named Chaz. He's like, "Hey, it's Chaz. You just got Chazzed." And you're like, "What is wrong with this guy?"
It's Chaz.
Yeah, and it's just a fun character. I just love that his name is Chaz Surratt.
I want to say there was a character on Futurama named Chaz, too.
I don't remember. There's Randy. Were you talking to Randy again? No. But I like him. He's a less perfect version of Jamin Davis. He's fast. You know, he's 6'1", 230. He's a smaller type back, but he's that guy who's that sub-package linebacker. He's going to be there in your coverage. A lot of teams are going to throw. If you can cover better, you're going to be able to do that. He can go sideline to sideline. He's got the speed. He can do all the things you won't need him to do. It would be a fun pick, and he's probably going to be there in the third. So that is my fallback. I think it's probably more accurate to say he's my draft crush, because a draft crush shouldn't be your first round hope. Your draft crush should be some guy you've looked at and you've watched who is not going to be in the first round. Definitely not a first rounder. But, man, you would really like to see him on your team. And that's kind of what Chaz Surratt does for me. He's a very interesting player, and I think he could be very good in this system. And we'll see how it works. My guess is we don't get any of the guys I really want, because this is also how it works. I'm pretty sure the other thing is everybody in Wisconsin, especially Owen Reese, I know, is pulling for the second round pick to be Quinnen Meinertz. If you don't know who that is, he's the guard out of UW-Whitewater who eats people, just destroys human beings. I think he's subject to some sort of curse or something that makes him just superhuman strength and just a monster, but he's a terror out there. Aaron, did you have any other thoughts, any kind of like strategy takes that you had on kind of what you were hoping for or what you wanted to see out of the draft?
Yeah, I would really like to see a whole bunch of defensive linemen drafted. Is that too much to ask?
No. No, that's fine.
Yeah, and your inside linebacker. Like, because, you know, that's the thing. It's like everyone complains about, you know, we need more cornerbacks, we need more offensive linemen, we need this, we need that. Those are positions of need instantly. Like the positions that have been lacking for the longest amount of time are defensive linemen. I mean, Kenny Clark, I mean, we had what's his name out of Iowa, Daniels.
Oh yeah,
who was Mike Daniels, who was pretty much on an island by himself for a while. But I mean we had him and Raji together for a little bit, and those were good days. Those were happy days, you know.
Happy days but
I mean, otherwise, you know, Kenny Clark's out there just trying to do it by himself at this point. You know, like, let's get that man some help, like some real help. And let's not relegate it to the third round. Okay. The Packers do very well. And it'd be like saying, it'd be different if we were like the Minnesota Vikings, who wait until the fourth round to draft offensive linemen who don't pan out. But the Packers do a very good job at drafting linemen in the third, fourth, and fifth rounds that turn out to be all pros. Mm-hmm. And borderline Hall of Famers. You know, let's spend some draft capital on some defensive tackles to help out Kenny Clark. Let's stout up the front of that defense, because guess what? Offensive line is not a problem. It was a little bit of a problem in the NFC Championship game, but losing Bakhtiari never helps.
Yeah.
You know, in that situation. So that was there's a lot of shifting against a very good front. But guess what? Guess why we lost to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers? Because of their front seven. We don't have a front seven. We have a back four. We don't have a front seven. We have a front three and a half. You know, let's, you know, how do you expose? Because the week before that, the Packers offensive line was just fine against Seattle. You know,
LA,
right?
The Rams.
Sorry, LA. Sorry.
And they have a decent front four. That's a decent front four. Their linebackers aren't as good. Right. I don't know anybody who has better linebackers than Tampa.
And right, what's his name who just got arrested? Blah, 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 blah. 99 just got arrested, or he's being investigated for assault. Aaron Donald wasn't playing.
Yeah, found he had nothing to do with that. He was actually helping peel guys off the pile. He got punched by somebody else entirely.
Oh, good.
Yeah, Aaron Donald was there.
I like Aaron Donald. I was hoping that didn't turn out.
Yeah, they issued an apology. The guy mistook who hit him. Aaron Donald was in the bar but didn't hit the guy. Here's the last thing they're going to look at. I'm going to say some things for next week.
But I mean, the offensive line held up well against the Rams, but fell apart against the Buccaneers, and that's how it's always been. I mean, those dynamic front force. I mean,
and athletic linebackers.
Let's go back to the 96 Packers, the most dynamic front four that has ever played the game together.
Wayne Simmons.
Santana Dotson, Gilby Brown, Reggie White, Sean Jones.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Just imagine that for a second. And who is the backup to Gilby Brown?
Gabe Wilkinson was in there somewhere. Gabe Wilkinson started the next year. Wilkins. Getting mixed with Dan Wilkerson, who's a different guy entirely.
I mean, so that was a backup, you know. But, I mean, so that was, you know, Tim Harris was gone at that point.
Oh,
too bad. So sad. But
love Timmy Harris.
Timmy Harris, great. Number 97. Love that guy. Bryce
Tim
Pop,
Harris.
Also, too. Anyways, but I mean, let's get that front four on the defense. Because a strong front four on the defense will make up for a lot of things real fast. And how about an inside linebacker who can play?
Well,
I mean,
you forget the linebackers. It's been proven
time and time again in this current league that if you have fast inside, just fast linebackers in general who can cover the field, cover the middle of the field, you're good. You know, we don't have, we have Kenny Clark and that's it. Mm-hmm. We don't have any of that. So let's go get that.
All right. We're going a little long on what we want to do. We're just a little over here. No, it's perfectly fine because this is really, people are more interested in Packer talk than the rest of it, but we still want to make sure we cover everything else. I want to do a little talk on some of the quarterbacks. I haven't watched a lot of them next week, but I want to look at Felipe Franks out of Arkansas and Ian Book out of Notre Dame. They're going to be further down the line, and I still really do think that late round quarterbacks are still a good thing to pick. You should pick a quarterback most years. Ron Wolf did it all the time. And, you know, we just lost the great, illustrious Tim Boyle or whatever to Detroit and just got to deal with that somehow. You know, I don't know. Just pick a guy who can come into camp and at least
interdivision.
Maybe
inter-division
sit there.
Rivals.
Yeah, so hard. I don't want to touch. Mac Jones is not good. He's not that good. And I think that basically he is the touchstone for understanding how much our team's willing to lie to you at this time of the year. Because the thing to remember when you read articles right now is when they say, like, team sources tell me, remember that 2/3 of the things that any team is willing to say outside of their facility is a lie. Just a lie.
Well, and after last year's draft, when remember Hebert from who the Chargers drafted, remember everyone said he was going to be a bust.
I didn't
think he just fed into that lie. Like now everyone's like, well, everyone thought Herbert was going to be a joke. Like he had no chance. Herbert was the best quarterback drafted last year. It's not even close.
Been 1 year. I did not trust him. I look very wrong right now. I didn't trust him. I didn't think I saw much of him at Oregon.
I think he'll be just fine. No, I remember at this time last year, you were just like, this kid's too rough. Like he doesn't have
destroyed by Wisconsin. Ability.
And then he just went out there and just balled out. Like he looked really good. Yeah. Like, but I mean, you don't know either. So it's just,
that's the thing. It's like when he went up against a good defense last year, he looked not good at throwing. That was the thing that got me. I was like, if he can't throw against Wisconsin, he's just a kid.
That feeds into the Matt Jones thing. It's like, well, Matt Jones just isn't going to make it the next level. Look at her. Look at Hebert.
Mac Jones is different. Herbert was a guy who was athletic and people liked how he threw. Mac Jones is the guy who makes average throws to incredible. He's going to have two receivers picked in the top 15, and he had the guy who finished second in the Heisman. I mean, I don't know what he does particularly well. Let's see. His RAS is a 7.19. He's not an athletic guy. He's never rolled out in his life. He can't particularly move that well. He's been behind the greatest offensive line, you know, of the season this year. I think Alabama won the award for best offensive line overall. And I don't know. I mean, like, I'm not sure he's anything yet. Like, he might be okay. I think if he goes to, like, the Patriots, then we'll be talking about how he's an okay quarterback because he'll go someplace that won't make him do anything he can't do.
Right.
And playing for the Patriots might be the best thing for him if he goes late to them somehow. But I don't see much else. You talked about the Brewers a little bit already, and the only question I really have, only thing I really have to ask about is why in the world the Council is so smart. Why does he ever pitch to Moran?
I don't know.
Moran hits like 120 against the rest of the league and 570 against the Brewers. Half his RBIs last year were against the Brewers, it seems
That's what I was talking about in the intro. Yeah. Just hit the longest home run I've ever seen live. That ball was smoked.
Colin Moran lives
to beat the Brewers. It was superhuman. Like I've never seen a ball hit that hard at any level at any time. I've seen Prince Fielder hit home runs. I was at the game in 2011 when the Brewers took the NL Central and Ryan Braun knocked one off the scoreboard in dead center. That was probably a 420-foot ball. I saw Greg Vaughn hit home runs in Old County Stadium. Like I saw Frank Thomas hit one when he played for the A's against the Twins in the playoffs that I thought was the longest home run I'd ever seen in my life. That ball yesterday, my God, it was it felt like it was still going up, but I mean, that's not how gravity works. The ball was coming down, obviously. But I mean, he crushed that ball. Not to wax nostalgic about a Pirates player hitting a ball, but my God, I've never seen a ball hit that hard. But yes, to your point, no, never pitch to that guy. Don't pitch to him. Like, pitch around him. Throw the ball at him. I don't care. Or just say you can walk to first base.
Especially if there's anybody on base. Because, like, with anything that matters, first inning, nobody on base, he strikes out looking. Third inning, two runners on base, hits a home run. Flies up the left in the fifth with nobody on, grounds out to second. 10th inning, they put a guy on second. What does he do? We throw to him, he doubles. That's the end of the game. I mean, and Fire Eisen has been very good this year. I'm not gonna rag on Fire Eisen. He's looked very good this year. Colin Moran, not a photogenic man, we'll say. The photo that they paid a professional to take of him. And then they put up there, it looks like nobody taught him how to smile when he was in school. Like, he's that third grader who's not sure how to do a smile unless it's actually natural. He just looks so confused and lost.
Looks like my poor son Andrew when he's trying to smile. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean,
Andrew's got no teeth right now. He lost both upper teeth, both front teeth in the last week. And then he had to have those two teeth pulled. He had a third molar on both a right side up and down, came in with no enamel on it, so he had to have it pulled. Jeez. And because they were just falling apart. So, and then he had five teeth fall out within 3 months after that. The poor kid, he looks like Leroy Brown with a couple of pieces gone, man. Yeah. So yeah, that's what Moran looks like when he's trying to smile for the camera. My son right now trying to smile with no teeth.
So in three games against the Brewers, he hits two home runs and a double. The double wins the game for him. Mm-hmm. Just don't pitch to him. Why are you doing? No, like, he did this to us last year too. This isn't just like, oh, I'm getting recency bias. He killed the Brewers last year in his couple series too. There's just some guys where like they just know you and they know your park and they like the feel, they like the lights, they understand everything about the situation, and they're gonna come right at you and they're gonna do something. And you're like, Moran's one of those guys.
It used to be like that with McCutcheon too. Remember that? And I don't know what it is about. I don't know what
Yadier Molina.
Yeah, well, I don't know what it is about the Pirates either. But so I was talking to Holly about this, and she's like, "So that game that when I saw the Brewers clinch back in 2011, when I was up in Duluth, I didn't get to a lot of Brewers games because that was a haul, you know. And so, you know, hopefully last year was the year I was going to buy 20 tickets, but anyhow, a 20 game package, but that fell through for reasons out of my control. So I was talking to Holly about that, and I've seen, I think in my last 9 games that I've been to Miller Park, it's been against the Pirates. And I think 7 of them have been losses. And I want to say that the year that they made it to the NL championship against the Dodgers, I want to say that they slaughtered everybody in the Central, but were like 3-15 against the Pirates or something like that. Like, what is it with the Brewers and the Pirates? Like, I don't get it. And like, there was one game I remember going to with Jason, my friend Jason Peterson. We were sitting down the third baseline. That's when McCutcheon was still playing for him, and McCutcheon went like 4-for-4 with 2 doubles, and the Pirates were otherwise terrible, and the Brewers lost 8-1. The Brewers had, there's something about the Pirates and the Brewers.
And I'm only when sure whenever they're bad, though, because when the Pirates were good, the Brewers would beat them. And then they'd be like, those Brewers.
That's the thing. It's like if the Pirates are going to go like 5-110 or 50, sorry, that's bad math, 50-110.
I like that.
18 of their wins are going to be against the Brewers. You know, that's just how it is. They're going to go 18-0 against the Brewers and 32-150 against the rest of the league. That was still bad math. 50. 32-110 against the
told there
the
would
league.
Be no math. I'm looking at his no splits. Math. I'm looking at his splits for this year too. Actually, he has the lowest batting average. He's played Chicago, Cincinnati, Milwaukee, San Diego, two series against the Cubs. He's batting .333 against the Cubs, and you know, in 21 at bats has 5 RBI. In 5 at bats in Milwaukee, has 5 RBI. He has 4 home runs on the year. 2 of them came against Milwaukee in this 3-game stand. Like, come on.
That one on Sunday should have counted for 2 home runs, by the way, because it would have gone out twice. But
it was bad enough. Problem for the Brewers here is that when you start looking at this now, you say this is not the sort of stretch you wanted to come into with a close series going on. The Brewers are now a full game behind Cincinnati. They've got, you know, they've got the series now coming up with the Padres, which is starting very late today. We're not going to get you a final on that today. Then you got to go play, you know, so it's at San Diego for 3, at Chicago for 3, Miami, and then the Dodgers at home. So that is a couple weeks.
At Chicago, that's okay. They're in last place. They're playing.
I'm not
last
as worried about
Cubs.
That.
Yeah.
We can beat Miami, too. I'm not as terribly worried about Miami. The best thing is Brewers are at the top of the lineup against the Padres. So they'll get Woodruff, Burns, Hauser for them, and then we'll use Anderson, Peralta, and Woodruff. And then by the time we get back to the Dodgers, we'll be Peralta, probably, you know, Woodruff and Burns, and then Hauser, because it's a four game set against the Dodgers down there end of April, beginning of May.
We're gonna roll out Burns. He's gonna pitch 7 innings. He's gonna get 10 strikeouts.
And for those of you who cut the cable and are very angry at Bally Sports for being on essentially none of them, the streaming services, the last game against Miami and the first game against the Dodgers look like they will be on ESPN Plus. So there's something for us because
so we can watch Burns, and Froley,
Anderson, and Peralta. Anderson looked very good
bring
in
Hader.
Last game against Pittsburgh where they won 7-1. Anderson looked very good. Finally got, you know, he seems to get the run support for some reason. He's 2-1 right now.
No, he does fine.
He got the 9 runs against St. Louis. He gets 7 runs against Pittsburgh. Right. What was the other game he pitched? He took the loss in a 5-3 game. They still got 3 runs when he loses. Meanwhile, there's Burns getting a 2-0 loss. Like, come on, man. Right. just rough times. So
believe me, I'm backing on the going back to game stuff. So, oh, by the way, just so everyone doesn't hate me, I did have my second vaccination shot. So leave me alone.
Yay.
As my wife. I'm half tempted to go down to Wrigley Field this weekend and be that belligerent Brewers fan.
Be the Cubs fan too there.
at AmFam Field South. I'm tempted. I'm really tempted.
All right.
So my parents are going to be in town. They can watch the kids. We'll go down Saturday night. Yeah. We'll make a mess. It'll be great.
Be fantastic. Wonderful. We'll touch in on the Bucs. Like we said, and we have said repeatedly, we just don't care about the regular season with the Bucs. Just not that much. They're going to be one of the top 3, and that's all that matters.
Right, and at this point, it's become very obvious that the NBA regular season is just garbage, especially with this condensed season that they're trying to do right now. I mean, we'd be rolling into the playoffs on a regular season right now mid to late April. I mean, would be the first round of the playoffs, but instead, everyone's protecting their players. I mean, the Bucks are protecting Giannis. I mean, there's no doubt about it.
There's no doubt.
There's no doubt. Ever since you said Burns. No.
We're just on a Jacques Lemaire tear.
Jacques Lemaire. But there's no doubt they're trying to protect Giannis. But and I'm becoming more and more, you know. Did you see that story about the premier soccer or the soccer?
Oh yeah, they're gonna make their separate European, some other like hybrid league.
Premier Bundesliga isn't in on it, but La Liga and the Premier League and the Spanish League. I forget what that's called.
La Liga?
La Liga. No, La Liga is Italy. But yeah, so like Real Madrid, Liverpool, Arsenal, Liverpool, which is whose whole mantra is that, you know, all for one. They were built from Liverpool was built from factory workers, and that's their whole thing, is that, you know, it's all about the fans, it's all about the people, and it's this weird thing. And, you know, so Zabin was talking about it. I was listening to Zabin out of Milwaukee this morning, Steve Zabin, and he was talking about that, and they were trying to compare it to, like, it'd be like if the Cowboys and the Packers and the Giants left the NFL.
Yeah.
And started a league with teams from other countries. And that doesn't really work. But so the way they ended up talking it through, and this is how it was in my head too, is like, you know, the two sports that are international, well, there's three international sports that we have, and it's not football, it's hockey, baseball, and basketball.
Yeah.
And that would be like the Lakers.
The Celtics.
The Lakers, the Celtics, and the Heat leaving the NBA to go play against international teams from Australia, China, and Europe.
Yeah.
And
so I take it the MLS is invited into this group, like, you know, the Chicago Fire or something, or the DC United. Right, right. They're probably invited
the Rangers, the Red Wings, Montreal,
Canadiens,
what's their name? The Habs.
Yeah, the Habs.
And the Habs and the Kings leaving to go play against Russia.
Yeah, they can
Russian
have them.
Teams and Finland and stuff like that.
They can take the Blackhawks.
That's kind of what it is. And, you know, and they brought up that point, and that's kind of what I thought too, is like, my God, that's going to be the next stepping stone for the NBA, is they're just going to leave the Milwaukee's behind. They're going to leave, you know, these small market teams behind. I mean, that's the next step, right? Because they're not making it, you know, they hate the fact that Milwaukee has good players. They do.
There's no TV money in putting a team in what, Belgrade, you know, it's like,
but there's money in putting a team in Moscow.
Maybe.
I mean, Helsinki.
Yeah, I mean, it's mobster money, but whatever. I don't know.
I don't know, but that's just what I was thinking about that too. And it's just, sorry, this is just long range thinking. Like, I'm sure time will prove me right in 10 years. But yeah, so no, NBA regular season is garbage. And so we'll pick this up. We'll pick this up around one when they're
the Bucks,
either.
The Bucks also just took the Suns to basically double overtime and lost by one. And the Suns are one game back of the Jazz right now. And so it's like, Bucks can play with whoever, whenever they want to. And they kind of wanted to play tonight. They didn't get it completely done, but they played a very good game. They're still doing fine. They're four games back of the Sixers. Mm-hmm. They will now play two games in a row against the Sixers. They're three games back of the Nets. And they're also nine games up on their division. I mean, come on.
Oh, and John, I wanted to let you know that you were right. Last year, you were talking about when Murray State, little known Murray State, was because we didn't have a tournament last year, but 2 years ago when Murray State was making that run of the tournament, and you said that they'd knock out Marquette. Listener of the show, Pete Owen, and contributor at my cubicle on a regular basis now that we're at the same cubicle farm. He went to the game against the Grizzlies on Saturday night, and he said, John Morant is for real, by the way.
Yeah. If I said at the time, there's gonna be one real NBA player on that court when Marquette played Murray State. I was like, and it's John Morant. That guy is amazing.
Yeah.
And this is gonna be, Marquette doesn't have a chance in that game. And they didn't.
No,
I wish they would have won.
He said John Morant is fearless, and not only that, but he has the ability to defer to Grayson Allen, who's on his team.
To be clear, I rooted for the Golden Eagles to win that game. They just didn't, and I wasn't going to put money on it.
I didn't, because I don't care about Marquette.
I like them in the tournament. I'd like them to win the Big East. Just, you know, they could lose to Wisconsin is all. And they didn't do that, and they didn't make the tournament, and they didn't win the Big East. They did nothing right this year.
They can win five games in the tournament as long as they lose to Wisconsin in the championship.
Fabulous. All right. Yeah, there you go. We're going to wrap up everything else that we have, which won't be a whole lot, but we're going to wrap it up in what we lovingly call our last call.
Time to look around and get your bearings. It's time for the last call.
Aaron, the only thing that I really want to get to the last call right now is volleyball.
Volleyball.
The volleyball was huge today. Badgers women made it into the Final Four, but wow, oh wow. If you haven't been watching, it's great, and it doesn't take a long time, and it's very exciting. The Badgers have rolled through the season. They're now 16-0, counting the playoffs, and they're the number one seed. They took on the eighth-seeded Florida Gators. Man, did Florida give them everything they had. This is the first time all year they lost two sets. They had to go to the fifth set tiebreaker, and they were down 9-7 in what is a 15-point tiebreaker, and they came back and won it 15-12 on just an incredible block. Those ladies are just phenomenal, and they are fierce, and they are just all over it. They murdered BYU. And it was fun to watch BYU for just a couple minutes because they were down, it got further and further behind each game. They were kind of there, 25-20 the first game. Then it was 25-18. Then it was 25-13 or something in the last game. It just wasn't even close. And then, they'd get a little run. They're like, oh man, 2 points in a row. We're only down by 8, girls. And, they get so amped and jumping around. I was like, wow, those guys are very excited for a game they are definitely going to lose by a lot. That Gator team did a lot of things that made Wisconsin very uncomfortable. They blocked very well. They outblocked Wisconsin, which is just not the norm this year. Wisconsin likes to be able to drive through. If you've been watching them this year, which you should, again, they drive through the blocks. They have big hitters, and they just smash it through the hands, and then it just drops down right past the blockers and in front of the back line.
They drive through so hard, we should call them Hardys.
I don't... Ouch. But, this one...
I prefer Chick-fil-A, actually.
You're just killing me.
That's better.
I've never eaten at a Chick-fil-A. But they just... They started blocking several of these. And so they started hitting a little higher. And Wisconsin had so many unforced errors hitting the ball long and out. And a lot of it just had to be that blocking. And Florida started, especially in Wisconsin, got up two sets to one. And, Florida was, it was the end of their season. And they took that fourth set, and they really, really focused on the soft touch hits, not trying to drive so hard. They got them ready for the big hitting that they could do, took that early. But then they started doing just little taps into the soft middle parts of the zones that they were setting up. They even had some where the setter just ready for the set and then just reaches up and just tips it over and out of nowhere, just instead of giving the set, just reached up and tipped over. And just, they did that 5-6 times, it seemed, in that fourth set.
You talk to me like I don't know volleyball. John, I'm from Turtle Lake, Wisconsin, three-peat champs, 93, 94, 95. When I was in high school, Bridget Scrivener on the inside, Jolie Nitschi setting the ball. And that's actually dirty if the setter's tapping it over like that. That's dirty play, John. The setter should not be tapping it over like that. That's cheap points.
We didn't have to do that, Pacelli. We came right at you. Also state champions.
Yeah. You crushed. Not three times state champions, John? Three times?
No. We won sure, once while I was there.
94, 95, 96. No, 93, 94, 95. That's what it was.
We were 96. I think it was 96. We were state champs in volleyball.
Yeah.
Shout out Kelly Pliska.
Yeah. In the parochial leagues, you couldn't have cut it against Turtle Lake.
They joined together, those parochial leagues won the majority of all state championships for the next.
They wouldn't have
years.
Beat Turtle Lake. Stop it, John. Stop it.
You're not
Stop
even a real school.
Anyway,
don't talk to me.
I'm from the swamps, John. From the swamps.
Whatever.
Turtle Lake, Turtle Swamp. Anyways,
are you Turtles or are you Lakers?
We're Lakers.
I know you
but
are.
Our mascot is a turtle.
Of course, because why wouldn't it be? We were named after Eugenio Pacelli, and so we're Cardinals because he was a Cardinal.
So, what was that? That thing. So, yes, we were the this Lakers, but our mascot was a turtle.
Obviously.
But, ever since the Lakers left Minneapolis, it moved to Los Angeles.
Yeah, we were on volleyball for a minute there, weren't we? I don't know what
you're
saying.
Yeah, we were, and we went down that hill. But I was just saying,
volleyball's fantastic.
Why does LA have the Lakers? There are no links.
All right. Anyhow, I used to also do, when I was in high school, I used to do some of the actual judging, line judging for volleyball games. It's fantastic. Everybody should be watching them. They're on ESPNU today. They're probably going to be on ESPNU for the Final Four. Check it out. Follow them. It's ESPNU, at Badger.
ESPNU.
No, yeah. At Badger VB. Follow them on Twitter because they'll tell you when all the game times are. That team is fantastic. And man, I'll tell you, I was so amped getting ready for the show because I was watching it today, and there were several times I was so confused what was going on. Florida had a very good game plan, came right at the weakest parts of Wisconsin, and Wisconsin just decided no.
Volleyball's the best too. It's such a quick sport. So I was blessed with really good volleyball when I was in high school.
Yeah.
Like I said, 3-time state champs, and you know And our girls were close my junior and senior the sectional semifinals both times, to the point that everyone in our school could play volleyball. Like we all played volleyball because, you know, we're from a small school, so we all played it. And what a fun sport. Like, and especially like when you watch the higher levels, it's amazing what they can do. Cause I mean, those spikes are coming down at 1,000,000 miles an hour, hyperbole, but somehow someone digs it up and they still set it and still hit it back the other direction. And it's insane. Volleyball is a very difficult sport to master. And it's
fantastic. Yeah.
And it's not your bar league stuff where people are doing weird double over hits and like, real volleyball is difficult. And
it's super
having
fun
played real volleyball, it is difficult, and it to be this good is unreal. And Wisconsin women's team this year is really good. And the fact that they're playing in the spring and it's a fall sport and everything's all messed up right now and they're still doing this well, go Badgers.
Back-to-back Final Fours for the volleyball team. It's their fourth time being in the Final Four. And since
they're not from Minnesota, they have a chance of getting out of the Final Four and winning it.
Yeah, Minnesota did not make the Final Four, neither did Nebraska, but Purdue was still playing Kentucky, the number 2 seed to see who got in. Badgers will be playing Texas for a chance to go back to the national title game, where last year they lost to Stanford, who is not in it this year.
Yeah, Minnesota can put 3 teams in the Final Four and still not win it.
All right, Aaron, you got anything else to add this week in terms of Wisconsin sports? We don't have any obscure baseball players that I can think of this week.
Did that last one meet my quota for ripping on Minnesota for 1 week?
Probably, you've been pretty rough on them this week on Twitter.
All the alls right now anyways for other reasons.
Yeah. I'll tell you, Josh did have a question this week. Greatest football team of all time. I imagine he's saying pro.
Greatest football team of all time?
Yeah. And that's a rough one because you would say like 85 Bears sadly have to be in it.
You
got to
break that into eras. Like,
yeah, like you 66 cannot... Packers, you know, the 66 Packers, the 85 Bears, 72 Dolphins.
The 85 Bears team was ridiculous.
It's hard to beat that team, unfortunately.
They overcame a bad coach in Mike Ditka. I mean, they had Buddy Ryan, but their head coach was a lunatic. They had that many good players. A coach who would rather run a defensive lineman for a touchdown than the greatest running back of all time. They had to overcome that. And a quarterback that was a numbskull, too. Everybody else made that team work.
The 91 Lions.
Some of the Pittsburgh teams. That's why you got to break it up by era. Because, basically anything before the Packers in the 60s, that's the old era. That's damn near rugby.
Yeah, 87 Lions, 87, 88 Lions. Those were good teams too. But
the 60s Packers, for there were unbelievable. The Pittsburgh teams and the Pittsburgh and Miami teams in the 70s were stupid good too. And I'm not talking about the undefeated team. They can get lost. But the Pittsburgh teams of the 70s were unbelievably good.
Yeah.
80s was kind of, you're looking at the 49ers and Bill Walsh's 49ers were unbelievable.
Mm-hmm.
90s, you had the Packers, you had the
Cowboys,
the Cowboys as well. Like the early 90s Cowboys were, the reason why the Packers only had one Super Bowl is because,
they should have had 3 or 4, but Cowboys seem so good.
And who was the coach that came after Walsh for the 49ers?
Seifert.
He snuck one in with Steve Young too. Because that team was still that good. It was still residually that good. Just like what's his name won Switzer still won with without Jimmy Johnson. I mean,
yep.
Same thing. Seifert was residual. best team of all time, though. If I had to just stop and think for a second,
the 1922 Canton Bulldogs with Jim Thorpe.
Yeah, there you go. You hit it.
Hard to beat Jim Thorpe.
Yeah,
that's my final answer.
Good job. I'll take that one, John. Good job.
All right. Thanks, Aaron. It's been another wonderful week. This has been good all around. We've had some weird technical issues, but we're getting through it, everybody. Thank you for joining us.
The Oorang Indians of Ohio.
Yeah. Thank you again for joining us, everybody, this week from the United States and around the world. Whoever it is that you do download, please remember to subscribe, download, listen, rate, and review us to help others find the podcast as well.
Buenos dias, hero.
Yeah. Benvenuto, Italy. Italia. But thank you again. It's wonderful to have everybody with us. We're still getting out some good sports content, and we'll be back here again next week, happy as ever, and hopefully with a Badger National Championship coming up here. Everybody out there, wherever it is that you're listening, whether you're on the town or you're on the go, it is always on Wisconsin.
Or as I say in Australia, on Wisconsin, right? Yeah, good night.
This has been the Scotty Johnny Podcast. Remember to find the boys on Twitter at ScottyJohnny1 or online at ScottyJohnny.com. Thanks for listening, and on Wisconsin.